We have been doing a sermon series on Joseph. I hope it's been fun for you. I'm really learning a lot. It's kind of exciting to go through a story in such detail. It gives us a chance to really reflect on what the scriptures have to tell us. This is, of course, first and foremost, a story of grace and forgiveness. It really tells us how someone who didn't allow anger and hatred to overwhelm his life was able to bring healing to himself, to his family, and to an entire nation, and really bless the world. It's also a story of God's providence, the idea that God has a plan and a purpose, and that plan is at work in mysterious ways that we don't always see, that maybe we don't even get is really happening, but it is. And we'll be reflecting on that as we go along in this story. Lots of sub-themes, too, as we go through the story of Joseph. And I titled today's sermon, Revenge Fantasy. And I did that because we're going to see in this story that Joseph has an opportunity to to take vengeance on his family for the horrible things they have done to him. So I think he's actually thinking about it, but we'll look at the story and see how we want to take it. Let's review what's happened so far. Joseph came from this large, very dysfunctional family. His father, Jacob, had 12 sons and one daughter, and he had them with four different wives. Probably not a great way to do family. And these wives, two of them technically were concubines, but these four wives were rivals with one another and had lots of enmity. And in addition, they had all these children, and they passed their rivalry and hatred on to their children, who carried on that. All of this was exacerbated by dad, Jacob, who played favorites and sort of encouraged this kind of conflict. And so the worst thing that Joseph did was he loved his one son, Joseph, more than all the others because he was the son of his, after all the other 10 sons had been born, then came Joseph and then came his younger brother. So they both came from his favorite wife, Rachel. And so he was his favorite, and we see him at one point giving him the famous coat of many colors, which we struggle with what that word actually means. It could mean bejeweled, it could mean different things. It's an unusual word, but it certainly means this, that Joseph was given a piece of clothing to wear that would not allow him to do manual labor. So the illustration I've been giving you is that it's as though he gave all the other boys blue jean overalls, and he gave this son a three-piece white suit. He's not going to be working in the fields. He's going to be the one in charge. That's what this means. And when he receives it, his brothers are super angry about it. He's the favorite, and he's the youngest. He's a little brother yet to come, but right now he's the youngest, and they're upset about it. And then he has dreams that further push this. And then he goes out and oversees them and gives bad reports to dad. And they are very upset about it, so upset, in fact, that they decide to murder him when an opportunity comes. They are barely talked down from this, and instead of murdering him, they sell him as a slave to passing slave traders. I don't know which is worse. I mean, that's one of those things my brothers always threatened to do to various groups. They were going to sell me, but they never did. I never really took him seriously. But here, they actually do. They sell him as a slave. And, you know, he has those dreams and visions. And there he is being carted off, you know, to the slaves. You see him beseeching his brothers and asking for their help. But that horrible feeling to realize his family has betrayed him in this terrible way and the hatred that reveals for him. And then we find him, you know, as a slave living in Potiphar's house. And he's like cream. He rises to the top, and he's now in this position of authority. There he's ruling over this important Egyptian official's family, and he's doing all these good things. But then Potiphar's wife, the official's wife, is sexually into him, and so she is chasing him and harassing him. And finally, he flees from her, and she has this cloak, and she accuses him of rape. And he goes from being this slave in a position of authority to now going into prison. I don't know what it's like to be a slave in prison. It seems like even if you get out, then your opportunity is to be a slave. That doesn't sound real good. He's there in prison, and he interprets various dreams for people, and finally for Pharaoh, who has this disturbing vision of he dreams of seven fat cattle that are swallowed by seven lean ones. He dreams of seven fat heads of grain that are destroyed by seven horrible ones, and he explains to him that this means that it's going to be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. And Pharaoh is convinced that this dream is true, this interpretation, and he takes him out of prison and puts him to a position of high authority over the land of Egypt. He is this governor. And we know that that kind of thing actually was happening in Egypt at this time, that many foreigners were ruling over the land of Egypt. So now, this is where the story is. 7 years of good times have happened. Now the famine has occurred. What's going to happen next? And this is what we find. Joseph was governor over the land. It was he who sold to all the people of the land, and Joseph's brothers came. And we're told just earlier than this that the famine has hit Israel. Israel was a land that had famines regularly, in part because, I don't know if you knew this, but Israel can't irrigate its land because the water they have there is too salty. So if they take water out of the Sea of Galilee to irrigate, it will in fact, in a fairly short time, poison the land enough that it won't grow crops. So they can't irrigate. Today they have a whole desalination system and drip system that makes it possible, but it's pretty technical. Back in those days, no opportunity. So famines regularly occurred. Egypt was the breadbasket of the ancient world. People would go there frequently, and they know that it's got good crops still. So Jacob sends his sons, 10 of them. And notice he's got 11 left, but he only sends 10. Why? Because the son that he now loves best is Benjamin, Joseph's younger brother, and he's not going to endanger him. He wants him to stay at home with him, and he sends off the other 10, which, again, he's still playing favorites. He's still got these bad family dynamics going, and these brothers come. And Joseph's brothers came, and they bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. And that reminds us of the vision he had. Remember way back when he said that they would all bow down before him? And now it's happened, just like he had prophesied in his dream. And then it says this, when Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he treated them like strangers and spoke harshly to them. Now, many people have said it's not surprising that Joseph would recognize his brothers after this is approximately 13 years later. After all, they're all together. They're all dressed the same. It wouldn't be that surprising. They were all adults. But people have said, why don't they recognize Joseph? Well, why wouldn't they? Because he is somebody they don't expect to see, because he's older and more mature, and because he's dressed like an Egyptian official, which would make him look a lot different. And they may even recognize some similarities, but he's very different from what he was. And then he decides to treat them like strangers, and he speaks to them harshly. Now, we're going to talk about what's going on here. But one of the things I hope you hear in these stories is something that it took me a long time to get. That is, that when we look at some of the stories of the Old Testament, particularly in Genesis, there's this, we're given just bare facts, and then there's a lot of ambiguity about how the story, what the story means. Years ago, when I was in an Old Testament class, we had a Jewish rabbi teaching, and he said that was part of God's plan. God gives us these stories, and we're meant to discuss them and argue over them and to kind of debate them, and that in that debate, we actually find, you know, new meaning and new ideas, and we grow in our faith. And he said, this was his example, not mine. He said, how do you get three opinions about a passage in the Old Testament? He said, you bring two Jews into the room. That was his statement. And he was a rabbi, so I guess he could say that. Anyhow, you get the idea that it was meant to be debated and discussed. When we look at this, there's not a clear meaning here. There's a lot of things going on. And I think one of the things is Joseph now has these people in his hands, in the palm of his hands, and he's wondering what he should do with them. He's debating about a revenge fantasy. He's thinking about, hey, they're the people who sold me into slavery. And I imagine he had several times in his life thought, boy, if only I have a chance, I'll get them. That's what I think. We'll talk more about it later, but that's where I'm going with this. He treated them like strangers, and he spoke harshly to them. Where do you come from? Now, that's a funny question to ask because he knows where they came from. They said to him, from the land of Canaan, and we came here to buy food. And then he says something funny to them. Here's a picture of them bowing down before him. Although Joseph had recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Joseph also remembered the dreams that he had dreamed about them. He said to them, you are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land. Now, all that means is, if you don't have anything, one of the temptations is to just get it for free by coming in and making raids. So people would come in and try to raid Egypt. Egypt was a powerful country, but typically everybody lived along the Nile, and then you have these long areas on either side of the Nile where there aren't defenses. So if people could come in on raiding parties, they could find places where they were vulnerable and attack. So he says, the nakedness of the land, the vulnerable places, the places where you could come in. So he accuses them of being spies. Now, if you were spying, you would send a party in, just like they were, just to buy food. But what you wouldn't do was have them all be from the same family. That would be weird, right? I mean, America has learned not to do that. I guess during World War II, we had the Sullivan brothers who were all on one ship. We did allow people to do that kind of thing back way back when. But after that horrible thing where all five Sullivan brothers died in one shipwreck, we have now tried to move people around. And we even have limits on how many can be forced into the military during a time of draft. So they said to him, "No, my lord, your servants have come to buy food. We're not here to do any harm, just to buy food. We are all sons of one man." So we're all brothers, right? That's interesting that they're claiming to be brothers. It's their family relationship that they think is going to bring them safety, because they haven't really been a family up till now, have they? Not very much of one. "We are honest men." That's really interesting because, you know, they've lied. They lied bold-faced to their father and told him their brother was killed by wild animals, and they brought him the coat of many colors to prove it. So they haven't been very honest. "Your servants have never been spies." That much is true. You can see all the things that are going on here. "But he said to them, 'No, you have come to see the nakedness of the land.' They said, 'We, your servants, are 12 brothers, the sons of a certain man in the land of Canaan. The youngest, however, is now with our father, and one is no more.'" Now they're given all this information because they're trying to get out of it. And notice what he's going to say here. He's going to take that information and use it. "Joseph said to them, 'It is just as I have said, you are spies. I don't believe you're a family. I don't believe you're brothers. You all look different. You're the, you know, he doesn't. Here is how you shall be tested. As Pharaoh lives, you shall not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here.'" So here's how you can all be saved. You need to get your youngest brother and bring him here. Boy, this is having them think about sacrificing or one for the sake of all, right? Now, is this a possibility for them? Can they go and get the youngest brother? Do you think that Dad will let that happen? What do you think? Okay. "Let one of you go and bring your brother while the rest of you remain in prison." That's appealing, isn't it? "In order that your words may be tested, whether there is truth in you or else as Pharaoh lives, surely you all are spies." And he put them all together in prison for 3 days. And everybody wonders, what is Joseph doing here? Is he testing them? Is he playing with them the way a cat plays with a mouse? Is he getting his revenge on them? They are certainly going to experience a lot of the things that he experienced. And certainly one of those was being put into a pit for days until the slave traders came along, right? So they're all there. And I imagine him thinking these revenge fantasy things. That's what I imagine him going through and trying to decide if he should really do what he's kind of imagined all along. I don't know about you, but I do have revenge fantasies. When somebody hurts me or harms me, I don't think it's a good thing. I'm just being honest that I have them. I remember going to see a movie years ago, Fried Green Tomatoes. Not a great movie. I don't know if any of you remember it. But there's one scene in that movie where there's this a lady is getting ready to park in a parking space, and as she's getting ready, this younger gal cuts her off and takes the space, and she is very angry. And the girl comes out of her car and says, "I did it because I'm younger and I'm faster." And the old lady then backs up, she's not old, she's middle aged, she backs her car in then and just smacks the car. And the young gal goes, "What are you doing?" And she says, "I'm older and I have better insurance." And you know, the entire theater at that time erupted in applause when I was there. And that told me, hey, I was kind of thinking maybe I was the only one who had these kind of revenge thoughts, but wow, that's what that was. It's a revenge fantasy being played out. Because if we saw that in real life, we would not be clapping, would we? We would be going, oh, that's not a good thing. Let it go, right? We'd be singing another song, let it go, let it go, right? Because we know that's not a good way to be. That's not the way we should be responding. But there's something about us that imagines those kinds of things, right? I remember there was somebody in the church once who did something to me, and I was just ashamed of it. I held on to it for several years. I just couldn't let it go. And it was amazing because I had this one weird revenge fantasy, and it actually happened. They came into a position where they had to ask me for a big favor, and it was actually what I had imagined in this fantasy. And I remember thinking, wow, they're right on the palm of my hand here. But I thought, wow, what kind of person do I want to be? How do I want to live, right? I think Joseph is experiencing this, and he had something so much. I mean, that's terrible. What could be worse than being sold into slavery by your brothers? It's hard to think of something much worse. He's got them in the palm of his hand. He's thinking about what he should do. I think he's praying about it. He's deliberating. But here's some of the things that people think are happening in this story in addition to all that. Some people think that, first of all, he is getting revenge. That's a common thought. Some people think he's testing them to see if they've changed, right? Are they different now than they were before? Have they become better people? Wow, that's kind of interesting. But what does that mean? If they haven't improved enough, then I crush them? That's what some people think. Some people think he's doing all this to get his brother Benjamin there because he's the one he cares about. That's an interesting thought. And some people think, like me, that he doesn't know what he's doing and he's figuring it out as he goes. And there are still others who think he is super smart and that he has come up with a plan by which he is going to make them, help them become family. I think that actually does happen. I'm not sure that's his plan. But here's what happens in this. They're going to go through a set of ordeals and troubles and trials that are going to actually bring them together. Notice what they've already done. They've already said, we're the sons of one man. We're a family. We're together as a unit. And they're going to continue in that kind of path, becoming more and more family in this. And that's an idea we're going to be exploring next time, but I want to lift that up for you to think about how ordeals and troubles and trials can do one of two things, either break us apart or bring us together. How do we respond to trials and troubles? You know, I'll share this story, which isn't a big trial, but when my family moved to Germany when I was in high school, we had this house that the company had rented for us. It was this huge house, and I don't know if you knew this, but Germany, at least at that time, they didn't have closets. They had things called shrunks, which were like big cabinets or dresser drawers, I guess you could call them, but they were huge. They'd take up a whole wall, and that would be your closet. When we came to this house, there were 5 shrunks, but they were all, for some unknown reason that we never did figure out, in one room mixed together with instructions only in German, which I knew a little. And so for 3 days, my dad and I put together these shrunks, and we had to head them in the right rooms and figure out what they were and sorting them through. It was one of the best things we ever did in our lives, okay? Brought us together in ways that were just neat, because, you know, I wasn't that crazy about living in Germany. I didn't want to move. But, you know, my dad and I are there. We got to figure out how to do this project. And we spent 12 hours a day putting together these stupid closets. It was kind of a neat thing. Ordeals can bring you together, right? How do trials do that? And is he deliberately having a trial so that they are brought together? That is what's going to happen in this story. We'll talk more about it next week and see how it plays out. But I want to tell you right now, this is a family that is a mess, isn't it? I mean, could it be a worse mess? There's the brother who's got him in the palm of his hand. There are people who are starving to death. There are people who are in need. There are still rivalries between them. Dad's still playing favorites. There are all these different problems going on. And boy, it's going to get worse here. Look what it says here. They come home. This is what they find when they come home. As they were emptying their sacks of all the grain, there in each one's sack was his bag of money. How do you think they felt about that? You'd like to get your money back, but would you feel comfortable about that? One brother's being held captive. He's accused us of being spies, and now we have our money back? That can't be a good thing, they're all wondering. When they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were dismayed. They don't know what to do. And their father, I love this, Jacob hasn't changed any. He says, I am the one you have bereaved of children. He gives them this huge task, you know, go for a month-long journey, buy grain, come back, and save us all. But now you haven't done it right. I love people who do that kind of stuff, don't you? All right? And he's blaming them. I'm the one you have bereaved of children. Joseph is no more. Simeon is being held captive back there. The others were released. And now you would take Benjamin. All this has happened to me. Notice Dad just moaning and groaning. Then Reuben said to his father, you may kill my 2 sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands and I will bring him back to you. He wants to go save his brother. And Dad says, no, we're not doing that. And notice this, my 2 sons, he's just speaking off the mouth. Crazy talk. But he said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead and he is alone as left. If there should come harm to him on the journey that you are to make, you would bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to Sheol. So he says, I'm going to die alone with no kids if I let you go. So he's going to keep his son there, and the heck with Simeon, who's now a sacrifice. Lots of things to think about here, aren't there? And so we get this final picture, this family that's a mess, this whole kind of question about what's going to happen in the future. Will Simeon be saved? Will Joseph and his brothers be reunited? What's going to happen to the family? What's going to happen to the covenant promises of God? All these things are a mess. And I share that with you because that's where we often find ourselves in life. Big mess. We don't know what to do going forward. We got problems galore. How do we get, what do we do happen?